Thank you, Jill. As I was listening to Jill, I was just thinking of the words of Jesus. He said to his disciples, lift up your eyes. Just lift up your eyes. And look on the fields. Just broaden your vision. Expand your outlook. Embrace what is going on in this world. And what will you discover? Lift up your eyes, look on the fields, they are white, all ready to harvest. It's quite possible that when you look down into the situation that you find yourself, it's pretty barren and pretty dry and nothing much seems to be happening. Don't assume that because it's dry and barren in your little neck of the woods, the whole world is in a situation like that. It isn't. The gospel is spreading forth rapidly and triumphing in these days. We're part of a universal church. We're part of a fallen global community. And so we need to be alert to what is going on. We need to be interested in what is going on and caught up in what God is doing. So thank you, Jill, for that reminder. Now, we're going to look into Philippians again today. Let me remind you of our key text. It is found in chapter 1 and it is verse 27. Whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. Stuff happens. We spend much of our time reacting to the things that happen around us, the things that happen to us. How we react is demonstrative of what is really going on inside our lives. And the Apostle Paul says what really should be going on inside our lives is our experience in its fullness of the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. It's like a tube of toothpaste. Squeeze it, and what comes out is indicative of what's inside. That's what we've been talking about so far. We thought about two aspects of this. Whatever happens, stand firm. Had a chat with one of our campers just this morning. She told me that she got a call from her close friend, and her close friend's husband had just admitted to an adulterous affair. She says she feels as if the rug has been pulled from under her feet. But our camper has been listening to the word of God this week, so she ministered to her, and she says, whatever happens, stand firm in the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. This is a message for all of us. This is a message that we can share. It is a message that our world needs to hear. So whatever happens, stand firm. And then secondly, and yesterday we talked about whatever happens, stay humble. And if you have difficulty being humble, always remember that Winston Churchill had a good word for us. He said, Clement Attlee was a very humble man because he had a lot to be humble about. And that applies to us. If you have difficulty being humble, just ask yourself one question. What do you have that you have not received? What do you have that you have not received? And that, of course, will be very, very helpful. It's only when we are humble that we begin to understand who God is. It's only when we are humble that we begin to relate rightly to people. It's only when we are humble that we are facing the reality of ourselves. But, well, I mustn't start preaching all that all over again because we need to be moving on to something else. So let's look now in chapter 2, reading from verse 12. Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. Do everything without complaining or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a crooked and depraved generation, in which you shine like stars in the universe, as you hold out the word of life, in order that I may boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labor for nothing. But even if I am poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice and service coming from your faith, I'm glad and rejoice with all of you. So you too should be glad and rejoice with me. Whatever happens, says the Apostle Paul, keep shining. Whatever happens, keep shining. Notice particularly what he says in verse 14. Do everything without complaining or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God, without fault, in a crooked and depraved generation in which you shine like stars in the universe. What a beautiful picture. One of the vivid recollections I have from my privileged life, which has allowed me to travel all over the world, is for 1 week, a good friend of mine and I joined other people in the deserts of northern Kenya, right on the border of Ethiopia. We were in the middle of absolute nowhere. There was nothing but desert in the whole area. It was primitive, to say the least. That was the best thing you could say about it. This is primitive. There was nowhere for us to sleep, and so we had sleeping bags, and we just put them down on the sand, and the idea was we went to sleep. We did have a very primitive toilet built there, and I needed to visit there one night before going to bed. And I was surprised when the missionary we were with insisted on coming with me. I said, no, I know how to do it. I can handle it. No, he said, I just need to check for snakes. I said, what? Oh, he said, the snakes love it. And he said, we have puff adders around here. And he said, they're nasty beasts. And so he said, I'll just check and make sure, and then you can go and do whatever you need to do. So with that happy thought in mind, I climbed into my sleeping bag for the night and decided to go to sleep, wondering which snakes would come along first. As it happened, that particular missionary had recently built, was in the process of building himself a house, and they hadn't got it finished, but they were living in it. There weren't any doors on it. And one night, he woke up in the middle of the night. He heard a strange hissing sound, and he recognized what the hissing sound was. It was a snake. And this hissing sound seemed to be quite close to his ear. And he realized that probably what had happened was the snake had come in, climbed up on the bottom of the bed, worked its way between him and his wife, climbed over the pillow into the place behind his head where he kept a pile of books. And he thought, I think this snake is probably just right behind my head on the back of the bed. So he reached back and he grabbed in the dark, and he got it, but the snake got him first. You see, this is where we were. this is the place that we have enjoyed ministry at different times. He was bitten on the hand by that snake. He has never been the same since that day. So all that to say that I've never been bitten by a snake, but we got in our sleeping bags. And I didn't sleep very well that night for some strange reason. But it was a memorable night. You know why it was memorable? Because we were out in the desert and there was no artificial lighting. And the sky was a deep blue black velvet. And all over that deep blue black velvet sky, there were hanging luscious things. And I realized they weren't fruits, they were stars. And I have never seen such bright stars. And I've never seen such beautiful stars. And you know why? Because I've never been in a place so dark. And the darker the situation, the brighter the stars shine. That's the message I want to get across this morning. The darker the situation, the brighter the stars shine. Now look what the Apostle Paul says here. Now he's writing to first century Greco-Roman culture. And this is how he describes it. He says, we live in a crooked and depraved generation. What he's saying is, brothers and sisters, this is a dark scene. This is a dark situation. Now, you can find yourself in a dark situation, and what can you do? You can curse the darkness. Does that do any good? Not a bit. Another alternative, instead of cursing the darkness, is you can light a candle. Doesn't make a huge difference, but in the area of your influence, the darkness is banished. That's basically what Paul is telling these Philippian Christians. In other words, whatever happens in this crooked and perverse generation, in this dark situation in which you find yourselves, recognize that this gives you the most incredible opportunity to shine brightly. In fact, the darker the scene, the easier it is to shine brighter. That's the calling, of course, I believe, of the Church of Jesus Christ in all generations. We can spend our time deciding which is the worst generation. We can spend our time if things are worse than they've ever been. I hear people telling me this all the time. Things have never been this bad. I said, have you studied history? Just try studying history sometime. And I'm not suggesting for a minute it isn't dark. And I'm not suggesting for a minute we don't live in a generation or in a culture that is not going in the right direction. But don't say that this is the worst it has ever been, because we're really not in a position to compare. And there's no point in comparing. Right now, I would say, what Paul is saying here is directly applicable to the situation in which we live. And there are some people, even Christians, who living in the culture that is now 21st century American culture, are basically doing little more than curse the darkness. And that's not what we're called for. We are called for something very, very different, and it is this. However dark it is, whatever happens in the situation, however the culture impinges on your conscience, however the culture impinges on your convictions, whatever happens, you just keep on shining in this culture. That's what it needs. That is what we are called to be. Well, how do we get there? I guess we can ask the question we were asking the other day, but how? How do we shine in this? Well, I'm glad you asked that, because if we refer to the text, it will give us the answer. This is what he says. He says, the important thing that you do is this, that you live a life of obedience to the things that you know. You live a life of obedience to the things that you know. Actually, Paul puts it another way in chapter 3, verse 16. He says, only let us live up to what we have already attained. I find people very often are saying, well, we need to hear something new, or have you latest this, or have you read this particular book, or did you know what has happened in California? There's always something happening in California. And the more bizarre it is, the more it'll be in California. So, but people get all excited about something new. My belief, my conviction, certainly my own experience is this. I don't really need anything new right now. I'm still lagging behind doing what I know. So let us live up to what we have already attained. Let us start taking seriously the things that we know. And that's what Paul says. The important thing to do is make absolutely certain you're living in obedience to what you already know. That would make an enormous difference, I believe, in many, many ways. But then it gets more specific. My dear friends, as you've always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, be obedient as you, listen, continue to work out your salvation. That's what we need to be doing. We need to be living a life of obedience to what we've already learned, and that what that will mean, it will mean that we start working out the salvation that we've already heard about, that we already profess to believe, that we already say we have experienced, because it is an ongoing experience. It is something that needs to be continually working out in our lives. What would that look like? I sometimes, in my pastoral ministry, have people come to see me, and they're in poor shape. They've had a very negative prognosis physically. They've become very, very discouraged. Their health is declining. They're depressed. Their attitude is going downstream. Their looks have changed. They've lost all the color in their faces. And you feel so sorry for them. You feel helpless for them. Where do you start helping them? Well, you start ministering to them as you can. You make sure that you've got support group around them. You give them advice about which way they should go, about looking at their different situation. And sometimes, very, very slowly, you begin to see change happening. And the day comes when one day they come to see you and they're actually smiling. And there's a light in their eyes. And there's a spring in their step. And there's a heartiness in their handshake. And there's color in their cheeks. What's happened to them? They've discovered new health. They've discovered new hope. They've discovered new freshness. They've discovered new vigor. And you start asking questions and they'll tell you, actually, I've been suffering from a wrong diagnosis ever since I was a child. I went to see another doctor. He did all the tests. He read all the information. And he said, I believe you've been wrongly diagnosed. And they put me on an entirely different scheme. I diagnosed it differently. And look, I'm a new person. And I said, well, what did they do? He said, he put me on a new medication. And you're taking that medication? Yes. And what's happening is this, that the medication is working in, but it's also working out. And you can tell what's working in by what's working out. And this is what the Apostle Paul says. You're going to shine brightly in a crooked and perverse generation when what God is seeking to work in you is now actually working out. And you can see it. You can almost taste it. You can feel it. You can sense it. You recognize it. It makes an impact upon you. And one way of looking at it, of course, is you're shining in the darkness. Now, but look at the text again. Much more in my absence. Continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. Now, let me talk to you about your salvation. Salvation fundamentally means two things. It means deliverance and it means healing. Deliverance and healing. Jesus was talking to some of the people who professed to believe in him. It's recorded in John chapter 8. And it's a fascinating story. And as he's talking to them, this is what he said. If you live in my word, if you live in my word, that is worth unpacking, but I don't have time today. If you live in my word, he said, then you are really a disciple. That's a very important thing to get hold of. If you live in my word, then you are truly my disciple. Then he said, then you will know the truth. And then he said, and then you will be free. The truth will set you free. Notice how one thing goes after another. Number one, live in my word. Number two, truly a disciple. Next, then you'll know the truth. Next, then the truth will set you free. You notice how we shortcut that? So we say things like, the truth will set you free. He didn't say that. He didn't say that at all. I've seen that engraved in granite over a library. It has absolutely nothing to do with libraries. Understand what he said. And then, of course, the people he said it to didn't understand it either. They said, we were never in bondage to anybody. What do you mean? We will be set free. We were never in bondage to anybody. Now, talk about blind spots. Even as they talk, there's an old Roman soldier goes marching past in his armor. They say, what's he doing here? Oh, he's just the army of occupation. You got an army of occupation? Yeah, but we were never in bondage to anybody. Hey, what was that about Babylon? Oh, that was nothing really. We were just sent into exile for 70 years, but we were never in bondage to anybody. Hey, what was that about the Passover and how God brought you out of Egypt? Oh, that was nothing. We were just in slavery to the Egyptians, but we were never in bondage to anybody. You know, talk about living in denial. And that's what people are doing in the world today. And Jesus helped them with that. He said, you're living in denial. He said, I'll tell you why. Because if you commit sin, you commit sin because you're a sinner. Now, you've got to get this right. You're not a sinner because you commit sin. You commit sin because you're a sinner. And sinnerhood is a state. It is a condition. It is an alienation. It is an attitude. It is a lack of relationship. It is somebody who's created by God, who has rejected God, has drifted away from God, and is living without God. We're created by God to live for God, to through God, accountable unto God. You see? But if we come from God and live through God and we're accountable unto God, but we lost God, then we don't know where we came from, and we don't know how to live here, and we don't know why we're here, and we've no idea where we're going. We're adrift. It's a condition. And this condition is at root a rebellion against God. And the problem with it is this. This is part of the human condition. We are in bondage to it. We are fundamentally sinners. And what do you expect sinners to do? They sin. So we don't commit sins. We don't become a sinner because we commit sins. We are sinners. We are estranged. We are alienated. We are in rebellion. We are separate from the source and the course and the force of life. We are dead to God. And as a result of that, all kinds of behavioral things happen. So what's salvation? Salvation is deliverance from a slavery we didn't even recognize very often. It is a rectification of the lack of relationship to God. It is a rectification and a forgiveness of the rebellion against God. It is a restoring of the life that has not been lived because we've been alienated from God. It's called salvation. Called salvation. And on top of that, of course, salvation has the meaning of healing. Meaning of healing. Because we've lived created by God, for God, by the power of God, accountable to God, theoretically, and we lost God and we rebelled against God, we had nothing to do with God, we went our own way. There's been dysfunction. That's a word we understand. There's been dysfunction in our lives and in our relationships. And there's been sort of a spiritual sickness in our lives. And salvation is healing. It's restoring. It's renewing. It's a fresh start. It's putting a spark back in your eyes, smile back on your face, color back in your cheek, spring in your step, heartiness in your handshake. You're alert and you're alive, and you look at this crooked and perverse generation and you say, what a chance to work out all that God is working in me. In deliverance and working in me in healing and working in me in transformation. And I guess I'm going to look different and act differently and sound differently. People might notice. We have 13 grandchildren. We have 11 of them that are our genetic grandchildren. We have two who are our step-grandchildren. But the only time we ever think about that is when I say something like that. They're just the same as everybody else. We have 13 grandkids. But then we have another echelon of grandchildren, and they are somewhat unusual. Let me tell you about one of our grandchildren. She is actually flying back to America today from Thailand. Her name is Melissa. Melissa was a naughty girl. She rebelled against her parents and just to decide she was going to live her own life, when she came out of high school and she volunteered for the U.S. Marines. And she signed on for 10 years as a U.S. Marine. She became fully trained as a Marine, but in addition to that, she was trained as a trauma nurse as well. She did two tours of duty in Iraq. She came back with post-traumatic stress syndrome. They treated her. She said she didn't hear a word of the treatment. They decided she was all right and sent her back again to Iraq. She came back a total disaster. One night she was listening to the radio. We happened to be streaming some teaching we were doing at Elmbrook. She started listening to this thing. She got intrigued. She jumped in her car. She drove up from Racine up to Elmbrook Church. She walked in, and Jill described her as a zombie. She had a hat pulled down over her face. She walked as if she was in constant traumatic stress and disorder, and she was. She wouldn't speak to anybody. We did an 8-week series. She came week after week after week after week and refused to speak to us. But she never missed, and she sat on the front row. And one day, Jill was able to catch up with her in the parking lot as she was just leaving. And Jill got hold of her and said, "Look, Melissa, we are going to talk now." The floodgates opened, and she began to talk about her life. She came to Christ. She began to have color in her cheeks and sparkle in her eye and firmness in her handshake. And you could see working out what God was working inside her. One day, she was sent back. She was still in the Marines at this time. They sent her back to Thailand. They didn't have any wars for her to be involved in at that particular time. And so, because she was also a medic, they sent her out to Thailand to do medical work in some of the needy areas. We got an email from her one day from Thailand. She says, I've just heard that my grandma has died. And she said, it's not right that a girl in 29 years of age should not have any grandparents left. So this is to inform you that you have been legally adopted as my grandparents. We have a few of these kind now. We are adopted grandparents to these people. Melissa came back, got out of the Marines, finished her 10 years there, and decided that what she'd seen in Thailand had so touched her heart. And bearing in mind the kind of lifestyle that she had been introduced to while she was in the Marines serving in Thailand, she said, "My heart just breaks for the women in the middle of Bangkok." Now, I don't know what you know about Bangkok, but Bangkok is a sink of iniquity. Sink of iniquity. I was in Thailand years ago with some missionary friends. My missionary friend said to me one day, "Do you want to play golf?" I said, "If you've nothing else to do, I'll play golf with you, yes. But it's not high in my list of priorities." I said, "I can't believe you've got golf courses here in Thailand." He said, "Sure." So he said, "I'll fix it up." So we arrived at the golf club. Got to the golf club. They charged us something that was about 3 or 4 times what they'd said over the phone. So my missionary friend said, "Hey, that's not what you quoted when I called you on the phone." They said, "Did you call on the phone?" "Yeah." They said, "You spoke in Thai to us?" "Yeah." They said, "You spoke such good Thai, we thought you were Thai." "No," he said, I'm American, you can see that." But he said, "What difference does it make?" He said, "The only difference in the world." She said, we charge Thais one price. We charge Americans 4 times that. We charge Japanese 10 times that. They said, "This is our economy here." They said, "Do you know that the Japanese send 747 full of men who are coming here for the golf and the sex? Do you realize that the Americans fill planes, loads of men who come here for the golf and the sex?" We realize this is Bangkok. And Melissa said, "God has done such a work of grace in my life that I believe he's calling me to the cesspools of iniquity in the middle of Bangkok." So she went. She got a room in the slums. She lives in one room place in the middle of the slums. and she shines. Not just because she's about 6 feet tall and a blue-eyed blonde among the little ties her old dark head and swarthy skins, because there's something about her. And I'll tell you what it is about her. She is making absolutely certain through a life of obedience that God is working out what he's working in. And it shows. And she's gone into a crooked and perverse place, intent on what? Well, it tells us here. Intent on holding out the word of life. Now, that just doesn't mean giving out tracts. Holding out the word of life means demonstrating, making available, sharing where needed, the word of life to those who most need it. Now, I'm not suggesting for a minute that the only people who are really living the Christian life are the Melissas who've gone to the middle of Bangkok, or the two women who survived Ivan prison in the middle of Tehran. I'm not suggesting that for a minute. What I'm saying is this. I believe every single one of us lives in a world that is fallen. I believe that we live, every single one of us, in a culture that is crooked and perverse. Those two words are critically important, crooked. You remember, what was his name? Yogi Berra used to play for the New York Yankees, had all kinds of wonderful things they said, he said. One of them was, if you come to a fork in the road, take it. Yeah. Our culture is crooked. And I believe it is because we've come at times to forks in the road, and we took them, the wrong ones. And we went on, we came to another fork in the road, and we took it. And sometimes it was the right one, and sometimes it was the wrong one. And that's how you finish up with a crooked culture. That's how you finish up with not only a crooked culture, but crooked education, crooked entertainment, crooked politics, crooked. Took the wrong place, took the wrong course. You finish up confused. And in addition to that, there are some people who take things that are fundamentally good and pervert them. That's how you finish up with something perverse. It is perverted. It is changed from what it was. Look at our culture. God invented a beautiful thing called marriage. Look what we've done to it. God created a beautiful thing called family. Look what we've done to it. God created something called freedom. Look what we've done to it. It's depraved. It is perverse. It is perverted. We took wrong turns. And we live now in a situation that is far, far, far from God. And it will be shown in some areas to one degree and shown in other areas to a different degree. I suppose we've tended to use the extreme examples of a Melissa in Bangkok, although there's other women in the Iranian prisons. That's one extreme. But where you and I live, probably not the extremes. But there's darkness, there's fallenness wherever we are. And what they need and what they deserve and what we are called to provide for them is some starlight in the darkness. A candle in the darkness rather than cursing the darkness. Paul doesn't talk about cursing the darkness. He talks about living our lives without complaining and arguing about it. All the complaining that goes on about the way things are going. All the arguing about the way things are going. Quit the complaining, quit the arguing. Try a little shining. And that's what we are called to do. Well, it's quitting time. And so I hope there are some things there that can give us food for thought and food for action. But whatever happens, stand firm, stay humble, and keep shining. God bless you. Thank you for listening.